The God story. Do you know that we are at a time here in Canada that's very different? For me, it's like no other. What I watch, what is happening in our government and in our history. If you've been watching the news at all, there's a huge leadership change that is coming in our government, right? Our current prime minister has been in power for almost 10 years, and things are about to shift. The sands of time are shifting, and we're on the precipice of that shifting. And in the midst of all that, there's stuff going on in the United States, and if you watch the news, there's rhetoric back and forth. In my lifetime, and I know I haven't lived that long, but it's the first time in my lifetime that there's talk going on about whether or not America is going to come and we're going to become America here in Canada. It's interesting. For us as Canadians, it creates a little bit of concern. It creates a little bit of worry, what's going to happen. And when we dive into this God story, which really is the story of God working in humanity from the book of Genesis, right at the beginning of the Bible, to the end of Revelation, there's a story there of God choosing a family and then a nation to reveal himself to. And at this point in time, when we start opening up the book of 1 Samuel, their time in history reminds me of where we're at right now. There are definitely differences, but there are similarities. If you're here last Sunday, we talked about the book of Judges. How about the nation of Israel? They come out of slavery, they walk into the land of Canaan, and they settle that area of the world. And in that point in time, they had spiritual leaders of the country, they had military leaders within the country, but they had no king. And the book of Judges is a 300-year period where the nation of Israel is an absolute mess. It's an absolute mess. They're doing whatever seems right within their own eyes. That's what it says at the book, at the end of the book of Judges. It's a time of spiritual confusion. It's a time of moral depravity. It's a time of political fragmentation within the country. And they have a lot of different leaders that pop up and lead them. None of them are really, really good. But when we look at the book of Judges, one of the leaders that pops out to us within that book is this guy named Samson. When I was a kid, I loved Samson. I loved the story of Samson. Why? Because he's a strong leader, literally, physically strong in the story. He's a person with charisma. And he reminds me of the type of leader that we're oftentimes looking to. Even within our culture today, when we choose leaders, when we're looking for leaders, whether it's political, whether it's in the church or whatever, we're looking for strong leaders. We're looking for charismatic leaders, and that was Samson. But when we look at his life, he's a person who doesn't have a lot of character. He's a person who doesn't have a heart after God. And so things don't go so well. So there's this 300-year period where things are just going horribly in the nation of Israel. And when we open up the book of Samuel, we read a story of God stepping into the situation. The sands of time are shifting. And when you open up the book of Samuel, if you know your Bible, that is a crucial moment in their history. It starts off with this guy named Elkanah, and he has two wives, Peninnah and Hannah. Now, if you're a modern-day Canadian, you're looking at this story and you have one man and two wives and you're asking yourself, what is going on here? If you're new to the Bible, you're saying, or you're asking, because you might have seen this several times in the Bible, how is it that these people who are so crucial to the story of the Bible are practicing polygamy? It doesn't seem like that is something that God would approve of. What is happening here? polygamy is something that's a bit of a sensitive subject. It's hard for us in the 21st century to fully wrap our mind around. But what we see in the scripture is God injecting himself into human culture. And they're doing things right from the beginning that if you walk yourself through the Bible, you know within your heart that God doesn't approve of these things, like polygamy. And yet God is slowly revealing himself to humanity. And what you see in the Bible, what Bible nerds and stuff like that, theologians will say is progressive revelation. They'll call this progressive revelation. God doesn't reveal all of himself all at one time. He first shows up to this guy named Abraham who's worshiping all sorts of idols, and he reveals himself to him, and he shows Abraham, I am God Almighty. I want you to follow me. And as you walk through the Bible, you see a God who is slowly revealing himself to humanity. And through that, there are parts of their life that they're don't completely line up with God's purposes and his plan and his will. But by the time you get to the New Testament, God has revealed himself enough that they've figured it out. Oh, we shouldn't be marrying multiple people at the same time. When we look at the very beginning of Genesis, God reveals himself and says that it's marriage is meant for one person, one man and one woman. But God is slowly revealing himself to people, and he accommodates humanity in the midst of their brokenness and midst of their confusion. This polygamy that's going on, it's not God's purpose, but he's accommodating himself to it, and he's slowly revealing himself. And so here we have this story of two women. Peninnah, who's married to Elkanah, she can have kids, and she's been having children. But then you have this other wife named Hannah. She can't have kids. She's barren. Now, if you've read other stories in the Bible previous to this, when you hit 1 Samuel and you read about a woman who can't have babies, a light bulb should go off in your head. You need to be thinking to yourself, I think I've read this before. I think I've heard of this before. Can you think of another time previously to this where there is a main character, there is a man, there's a woman, and the woman can't have kids? Yeah. Sarah's the big one that pops up. It happens to Jacob and Rachel as well. But Abraham and Sarah's the big one. And you know from that previous story of Sarah, who's eventually going to have a baby, that God is going to do something here. God's going to do something in the midst of this barrenness, in the midst of this hurt. God himself inserts himself into our situations that seem hopeless. For this woman, Hannah, who can't have a baby, her situation seems hopeless. God, when you start walking through the Bible, you realize that he is a God that inserts himself into broken situations. He breaks into our situations, and all of a sudden, there are miracles that start happening. In the ancient world, for us in the 21st century, it's not so much like this. Women don't have babies. It's not seen in the same way. But in the ancient world, when women couldn't have a baby, there was an issue of honor that was there. She was lacking honor. There's an aspect of having kids that brought honor to you. There's an aspect of having kids that brought validity to your life. There's an aspect of having kids that brought value to your life. For us, we're able to see that differently. We know that God looks at it differently. But for these people living in the ancient world, that is how they thought. For a woman to not be able to have kids, her aspect of value was up in the air. And so Hannah is absolutely heartbroken that she is barren, that she can't have kids. Her husband tries to console her. It's almost funny when you read in the book of 1 Samuel, husband comes along and he says, well, aren't I better than, you know, if you have me as a husband, then you should be okay because, like, you have me. If you're a woman, you ever read that, open up 1 Samuel and read that. It kind of makes you chuckle. As if this man is going to make up for it. But in this story, we have this family, this man and two wives, and they travel to Shiloh. Shiloh is the place, it was the capital at that time in Israel's history. It's a place where they would come and worship. It's a place where the tabernacle was. They'd come and bring sacrifices. And so every year, this family would travel to Shiloh and offer sacrifices. And this is what it says in 1 Samuel chapter 1, starting verse 9. It says, "Once after a sacrificial meal at Shiloh, Hannah got up and went to pray. Eli the priest was sitting at his customary place beside the entrance of the tabernacle. Hannah was in deep anguish, crying bitterly as she prayed to the Lord. And she made this vow, 'O Lord of heaven's armies, if you'll look upon my sorrow and answer my prayer and give me a son, then I will give him back to you. He will be yours for his entire lifetime, and as a sign that he has been dedicated to the Lord, his hair will never be cut.'" There's a lot going on there. But one of the things that we can grab a hold of right from the beginning is this woman's anguish and bitterness. In this story, this other wife that Elkanah has, Peninnah, she's mocking Hannah for not having kids. She's questioning her value, questioning her validity because she can't have children. And she comes to the tabernacle, the throne, the seat of God, and she just pours out her anguish and her bitterness to God. And when I read this, one of the things I feel like we can take away from is the fact that no matter what you're going through, if you are going through aspects, and we all do, if you are a human being, you're going to hit places in your life of anguish and bitterness. The question is, what do you do with your anguish and bitterness? The average human heart kind of stuffs it away inside. Maybe you become that angry driver on the road that gets angry at everybody. I don't know, there's different ways that we deal with our anguish and our bitterness in life, but one of the things I see Hannah doing that is such a good example for us today in the 21st century is bringing that anguish, that frustration, that bitterness to God. We see in this story that God hears her. God hears her. He hears her anguish. He hears her bitterness, and she pours out that to him. Now, in the story, she's trying to make a deal with God. If you do this, I will do this. And as I've said many times in this church before, just because you read it in the Bible doesn't mean it's a good example to follow. God isn't someone typically that we make deals with. It's generally not a good idea. I wouldn't encourage you to go with to God and try to make deals. But she's trying to make a deal with God, and in that accommodating nature of God, he sees her heart. He's not like, he doesn't say to Hannah, "You're an idiot. You can't make a deal with me." Actually, what you do see is God seeing her heart, seeing her anguish, seeing her bitterness. And we're going to see that God is going to answer her prayer. God is going to answer her prayer. As I mentioned earlier, we have this week of prayer coming up this week. Sometimes when we look at prayer, we see prayer as something that is a pointless exercise. But when we look all through Scripture, we see that prayer is something that does make a difference. When we take our needs, when we take our desires, when we take our anguish, when we take our hopes and our fears and we bring them to God, he hears us. God wasn't ignoring Hannah. He heard her prayer, and he's going to move on this prayer. Hannah's literally dedicating, she's going to dedicate this child to God. She's literally giving her son to God. Once he is old enough, once he is weaned and he's big enough, she's going to bring this little child, if she has this little child, she's going to bring him to the tabernacle where she's going to leave him there. Can you imagine, as a mom, maybe even as a dad, having a child, maybe they're 3, maybe they're 4, 5 years old, and you say, I'm going to take them to this faraway place where maybe you're going to see your child once a year and drop them off. And that's what she's promising to God, that he is going to be dedicated to the Lord. He's going to grow up in the tabernacle, surrounded by the presence of God for his life. She's not going to cut his hair ever. Why is she not cutting his hair? In Numbers chapter 6, earlier in the Bible, you have this thing that God allows the people to do if they want to dedicate a portion of their time, a portion of their life to God. It's called a Nazirite vow. And the Nazirite vow was such that they're like, God, I'm going to dedicate this time of my life to you, so I'm not going to cut my hair when I'm performing this Nazirite vow. I'm not going to eat or drink anything from grapes, so whether it's wine or fresh grapes or whatever, I'm not going to eat that. I won't touch anything that is dead or unclean. It's this vow of separation to God, saying, I'm going to separate this point in time in my life to God. The difference with Samuel is that his mother says he will do this throughout the rest of his life, not just for 6 weeks, a month, a year, but for the rest of his life. He's going to dedicate himself to the Lord, and he's going to use this as a physical reminder, not cutting his hair, of his dedication to the Lord. So we read in 1 Samuel 1, verse 20, it says, in due time, she gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, for she said, I asked the Lord for him. You know, Samuel means asked of God or heard by God. In the Bible, you have to notice this, that in the Bible, and even in the ancient world as a whole, names were incredibly important. Incredibly important. For us today, when we choose names, typically in Western society, we choose names because, oh, that sounds good. Or I saw someone on TV that had that name, and it's a cool name, so I'm gonna name my kid that. But when you open up the Bible, you need to realize right from the beginning that names are incredibly, incredibly important. It reveals who you are. It reveals your character. Reveals who you are made of. So when God reveals himself to Moses, Moses is asking God in the desert, he's saying, who are you? Who are you? And God says, my name is Yahweh. He reveals his name to him. He says, I am the I am. And so for Samuel here, his name means heard by God. When Hannah goes and prays to God and says, I'm in anguish, you need to do something about this, God hears her. So she names her son heard by God. Heard by God. And Samuel is going to grow up in the tabernacle. He's going to grow up surrounded by everything that is happening in the capital city. He's going to be surrounded by everything that's going on religiously in the tabernacle. He's going to grow up in the presence of God. You know, when it comes to being a parent, there's a lot of things that you can desire for your kids. If you're a parent here today, think of all the things that you desire for your kids. You desire, I think one of the biggest ones, you desire for them to be healthy, right? Just, man, as long as they can be healthy. If you're a parent, you're hoping that they can have a good education. As a parent, you're hoping that they can have a successful career, they can support themselves, they can support their family. If you're a parent, you're hoping that one day they'll have a good partner, they'll have a good spouse that will love them. If you're a parent, you're hoping that they will be happy. Can I share something with you from my heart as a pastor? One of the greatest things that you can desire for your kids is that they would grow up in the knowledge and the presence of God. If your kid can grow up in the knowledge and presence of God, so many of those other things that we desire for our children will fall into place. It's not a guarantee, right? Nothing in life is a guarantee. But as a parent, it's just like you just want your kids, I want my kids to know the presence of God, to know his love, to know his goodness. One of the things that I've said to my children, and I believe it's so true, is this, is that who you are becoming is more important than anything else. When you are a person who grow up in the presence of God, can grow up in the knowledge of God, that is shaping who you are. It's shaping your character. Who you are becoming is so much more important than anything else, so much more important than what you do as a career, what you choose for education, where you're going to live, your house, how you're going to dress, the toys that you're going to have, whatever it is. That's so much more important. And you know what? He is going to allow you to go through difficulties in life to shape that character. There's this aspect of the story of Hannah, the anguish and the bitterness and everything that she is going through, that God allowed her to go through. Could God have like stopped that and allowed her to be fertile right from the beginning, have kids and da-da-da-da-da? He could have, but he allowed her to go through that. Why? Because God's like, there's something that's going to be produced out of your life that's going to be so much greater than your anguish and your bitterness and your hurt. Can you trust me? Because I'm in the job, I am in the aspect, the things that I want to do is shape you. Who you are becoming is going to be so much more important than what you experience, even the hard things. And that is what God is caring about here. So if I can encourage you, if you are a person in this place that has kids, or if you're a person that's going to look to have kids or want to have kids, give your children every opportunity possible for them to be in the presence of God. Samuel grew up in the presence of God, and it transformed him and it transformed the nation. There's an interesting part of this story, though. Samuel grew up in the presence of God, and it transformed him. But there's another part of the story, because the high priest at that time was Eli. And Eli had kids, too. In the story, when we read in 1 Samuel, he had two kids, Hophni and Phinehas. And they were supposed to take over for their dad. And because their dad was the high priest, they would have grown up in the tabernacle too. They would have grown up around all the religious stuff. They would have grown up around the presence of God. But we read the story of Hophni and Phinehas. They were scoundrels. They had no respect for God. They took advantage of their position. It says right there in the Bible that people would be giving sacrifices to God. And they would be giving it, and they would come along and be like, that's mine, and they would take it. They'd take it for themselves. Even though it was meant for God, they would take it for themselves. It says in 1 Samuel that there were women, young women that would serve in the tabernacle. And Hophni and Phinehas, it says right in the Bible that they would go and they would sleep with these young women, take advantage of them. The Bible doesn't hide anything, you guys. If you're a person maybe who is confused, and sometimes, oh, the Bible's been changed, it's been adapted, and they try and like round off the rough edges, it doesn't at all. It doesn't at all. These guys were, these two young men who grew up in the church, they didn't have a heart for God. What is the difference between Hophni and Phinehas and Eli? To be honest, I don't totally know. Other than it seems like between Hannah and Samuel, there was such a humility that they came and did what they were called to do with. Samuel was humble. He humbled himself before the Lord, and he just wanted to be in the presence of God. It seems like Hophni and Phinehas just, they took it for granted. They took it for granted. They didn't have respect. They didn't have honor towards God. And so here's what it says in 1 Samuel chapter 3. It says, meanwhile, the boy Samuel served the Lord by assisting Eli. Now, in those days, messages from the Lord were very rare, and visions were quite uncommon. I read this scripture this last week, and it encouraged my heart. Because Samuel lived in a time when it says the messages from God were rare. People weren't hearing from God. Visions were uncommon. And maybe it seemed like God wasn't doing anything. God, are you out there? God, if you're out there, why don't you speak to us? Why don't you show us your glory? Why don't you show us your presence? What's happening? They weren't hearing from God. And yet when we read this story, we recognize that God is, he's on the move. He's doing something. In the midst of this silence, God is doing something. And maybe in your life, when you think about spirituality, when you think about God, when you think about all those things, maybe it doesn't feel like God is speaking to you. You're like, I'd love to hear from God, but I don't. I would love to feel his presence, but I don't. I want to encourage you, it doesn't mean that God isn't doing something in the midst of that spiritual desert you may be in. God is doing something here. We continue. It says, one night Eli, who was almost blind by now, had gone to bed. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was sleeping in the tabernacle near the ark of God. Suddenly the Lord called out, Samuel! Yes, Samuel replied. What is it? He got up and ran to Eli. Eli, here I am. Did you call me? I didn't call you, Eli replied. Go back to bed, crazy kid. Well, it doesn't really say that. That's my version. Then the Lord called out again. Now, just so you know, in our modern translations, when it says the Lord, actually in Hebrew, it's Yahweh. We have written in there the Lord in English, which is kind of a generic term. But when you see that in the Old Testament, it's literally, it's using the name of God. It's saying Yahweh called out again. This very specific God who has a specific name. Yahweh called out again, Samuel. And again, Samuel got up and went to Eli. Here I am. Did you call me? I didn't call you, my son, Eli said. Go back to bed. Crazy kid. Samuel did not yet know the Lord because he had never had a message from the Lord before. I love this. Here's a kid. He's like growing up in the church. Okay, he didn't call it the church. It was the tabernacle. But he's growing up in the tabernacle. He's growing up in the church his whole life, and he's heard from God in terms of the scriptures. He's spent time in his presence. He's grown up. He knows all the right things. And when God starts calling out to him, he doesn't even recognize the voice of God. He doesn't recognize the voice of God. You may be sitting here today. You're like, man, I've gone to church like my whole life. I've gone to church a lot. I believe in God. And you maybe have never heard the voice of God for yourself. And that's okay. Because in this story, Samuel needs to learn to hear the voice of God. It's a learning process. He thinks it's Eli that's calling out to him. But it's a learning process to recognize the voice of God and to hear the voice of God. And it says this, so the Lord called a third time. And once more, Samuel got up and went to Eli. Here I am, did you call me? Then Eli realized it was the Lord who was calling the boy. So he said to Samuel, go and lie down again. And if someone calls again, say, speak, Yahweh. Your servant is listening. So Samuel went back to bed, and the Lord came and called as before, Samuel, Samuel, and Samuel replied, speak, your servant is listening. I love this. You know that God is, like, persistent with us? You know, he reaches out to us through our experiences, through life, and sometimes we don't recognize that he's trying to get our attention. And it's okay because he's like, man, I'm going to keep pursuing you. I'm going to keep calling out to you. I'm going to keep trying to get your attention. The question is your heart open, right? Samuel's heart is open. So as long as his heart is open, God's like, I'm keeping calling you until you figure it out. And Eli, the old guy, in the tabernacle. He's been around the block a few times. He finally figures it out and says, oh, this is God that's calling your name. This is what you need to do. When he calls you, that is God calling you. You need to reach out to him. Listen to what he says. Do you know when I read this, we have a young person and we have a mentor. We have a young person who's trying to hear the voice of God, who's struggling to do it, and we have an old mentor who's been around the block a few times and can recognize the voice of God. And he's mentoring him in this process. Do you know that as followers of Jesus, we need mentors in our lives? We struggle in our journey at times. We all do. And we need people in our lives that have been further down the road than us, that we're able to go to and, man, I've been experiencing this or whatever. Someone who can speak into our lives. Someone can help us hear the voice of God. And that's what's so important about church, and that's why we do this, to build relationships, is that we need other people. And one of the things we do is we need different people from different walks of life. So if you're a young person in this room and you're only surrounding yourself with people that are at the same stage of life as you, same age as you, I would encourage you to build relationships with other people in the church that have been further along the journey. It'll be a beautiful thing. And if you are older in the church, man, reach out to young people. Oftentimes, young people are scared of you. They just need someone who's older to reach out. And I know the older people in the church are like, man, but I'm scared of those young people too. You know, young people, sometimes old people are scared of you. But we need each other. And that's what, like, even Nathan was saying about small groups earlier, is that we need each other to help hear the voice of God. Our time is always limited on Sunday mornings, but you know what? Samuel ends up leading the nation of Israel for the most of the rest of his life, until he's an older man. Samuel wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But it seems to me that the key indicator of his success as a leader had more to do with his desire and his heart, his soft heart towards God, than anything else. Don't know a lot about his personality. Don't really know a lot about his giftings. He has such a heart for God, and he leads the nation of Israel into a new era that we're going to be talking about in the weeks after now. I'm going to call the worship team forward. As Samuel is getting older, we read in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 5 to 7, the people of Israel come to Samuel and they say, look, they told him, you are now old and your sons are not like you. Give us a king to judge us like all the other nations have. Samuel was displeased with their request and went to the Lord for guidance. Do everything they say to you, the Lord replied, for they're rejecting me, not you. They don't want king any longer. Man, that's some deep stuff right there. They're like, your kids aren't like you. We want a king. We want an actual king. They haven't had a king up to this point. We want to be, like, we watch all these other nations around us and they have kings. We want that. And you can see Samuel, like, he's hurt. He's dejected. In the midst of his hurt, he brings that to God. And God says, Samuel, this isn't about you. This isn't about you. This is about me. They're not trusting in me. They're relying so much on human leaders to solve their problems. They've stopped looking to me. They're not relying upon me. And I read this, and you know what? A lot of things have changed, but a lot of things haven't changed. This is still our struggle today. For us in the 21st century, we're always looking for the next human leader that's going to solve our problems, that's going to take us to the promised land, that's just going to make things so much better. You know, politically, if we look at our country, we're like, if we can just get a better leader than Trudeau, then everything is going to be better here in Canada. Maybe a little. But one leader isn't can only do so much change. For me, as a follower of Jesus, I don't put a whole lot of stock in that. Because at the end of the day, I look to God. I said, God, would you lead us? Would you lead us? And you know, we struggle with this in the church too. We struggle with this in the church. We love strong Christian leaders. We love charismatic leaders, and we follow them, and we want those Christian pastors, those charismatic leaders to lead us to the promised land, and then we're so crushed when they fail. And we watch it on the news. That pastor of that mega church down in the States, he fell again, and he sinned and whatever. And we're so crushed by that. And sometimes we walk away from faith because of the failure of Christian leaders. And at the end of the day, I think the heart of God is similar to what we read just up there, is that God is disappointed in the fact that we're following human leaders and relying on those human leaders so much rather than fully relying upon God. And that's where Jesus comes into it, because these leaders that we read about in the Old Testament, their journey, their story was just to point us towards Jesus eventually. The true King of Kings and Lord of Lords, who's going to come, who's never going to disappoint you, who's never going to fail you, who's never going to fall into sin. He is the only perfect leader that we will ever have. And so, until Jesus returns, we're going to have human leaders. And they're going to fail us. Because, you know, when we read in the Bible, even the best leaders, even the best of the best of the best, they also failed. They also failed. But Jesus doesn't fail.